Hey, you know this story about this lightning bolt hitting this plane that had these 22 Methodist ministers and a movie star aboard, knocking a chunk 20 inches square out of it? You know, that's the kind of thing that makes you think. It makes you wonder whether it was the movie star or what they were aiming at, you know? You never know which way it's going to happen and which way it's going to go. And I'm sure that this is going to result in some fantastically fiery sermons. I'm quite sure that it's going to result in a few leaves being turned over. You know, boy, I'm telling you, really, it does make you worry. And I don't think I'm being facetious at all. It does. I mean, because there is lurking in the back of us, even though it's Friday, you know, and I think especially because it is Friday, Dad, it's lurking in the back of your mind, that it's always there, you know, like the end of the world is always about to happen. I mean, there must be 5,000 guys right now at this minute driving along the Jersey Turnpike, heading off into the wilderness there, into that gigantic jungle of drive-in diners and pizza joints and seat cover emporia, heading off into the jungle there to make the scene, who vaguely feel that if they, one false move and a gigantic male fist is going to come out of the sky, pow! And they know that they deserve it. That's a fact. I mean, I wonder what would happen if the voice of God ever did speak. And let's say blue, just take Rhode Island right off the map. Pow! No Rhode Island, big smoking hole there. I guess we'd blame it on the Russians. Or if the entire Ukraine disappeared one night in an enormous shower of flaming chariots. I don't know what would happen. You know, that would be a great... I'm just trying to think of what the newscast would read like, you know. But we're all, you know, it's all a little secret thing going on. Like the other day, I'm sitting in this cab, Ed. And, you know, you don't expect it. And we're driving along. We're in midtown traffic. We're knee-deep in guys hollering and spitting and swearing and yelling, banging doors at each other. And we're heading across Fifth Avenue, see? And all of a sudden, making conversation, I say, wow, you know, it was a nice warm day. The breeze is coming in. I says, wow, it's warm. Crying out loud, never thought spring would come. Wow. And the cab driver says, yeah. I says, yeah, I never thought spring would come. You know, I heard on the radio that it was the coldest winter that New York has had for a long time. A really cold winter. We didn't have so much snow, but it was one of the coldest winters on record. Yeah. Then there's a long pause that kind of hung there, you know, like a bunch of grapes, getting a little rotten down around the bottom. And I knew that something was cooking around in him. And you could feel it, you know, you can see the steam coming out of the ears. And all of a sudden he comes up with it. He says, hey, did you hear anything about an ice age coming? I said, what? You know, it's true the newspaper strike has been pretty tough. We don't get much news, but, you know, maybe this guy's reading the out-of-town papers. I said, what? He says, ice age. I heard a guy one time saying that we're getting an ice age here now. An ice age like. He said, what is it like in an ice age? Well, this was one of those wonderful people who always assumes that the guy who's in the back seat knows more than he does. So I accept, you know, I accept the nomination. I said, well, an ice age is very interesting, actually. He says, well, what are they like? What did he mean, ice age? Where's the ice go? I said, well, I'll tell you, you got to figure it this way. If there was an ice age, have you ever seen pictures of the North Pole? Yeah. I says, well, now, you know how it was. He says, yeah, all the big things, the mountains of ice and all that. He says, I'm penguins. I says, well, that's true. Now, if you can imagine that ice, just like that, if it was to go, say, all the way to, oh, I'd say roughly Hempstead. If, for example, if I was to tell you, I get in a cab, see, at 47th Street, and I say, take me to the glacier, please. Well, it would only be like a $2 ride, and the glacier would be there. He says, you mean the ice is like the North Pole everywhere? What would that do? I'm describing an actual conversation. Sounds like I'm inventing it, but this would happen. I says, well, it would be cold, very cold. And there's a long thought, and he says, yeah, but I don't think it would work. I said, what? He says, well, all the kind of modern buildings we got now with the air conditioning, I don't think it would make no difference. Well, it doesn't... Wait, with the ice age, I don't know how the Lieber house would survive with the ice age. I'm not quite sure with the ice 450 feet thick over Staten Island. I'm not quite so sure that the air conditioning would do it, you know? And I said, well, you know, the ice age is not really like just a cold winter, actually. It's a little more than a cold winter. Well, what do you mean? It's cold, ain't it? I said, but it's very cold. I mean, it's cold like all the time. The ice doesn't go away. It's, well, if the Mets had to go south for the winter, you know, to get into condition, they would have to go roughly to Nigeria to get even warm enough to get even the worst relief pitcher warmed up. That's how cold the ice age is. The long thought there. He's thinking about that. So, of course, we're sort of boffing it up. I have to explain that to you. We're kind of boffing it up. He's laughing. But you can see he's worried. You see, he's really worried because he wonders, you know, whether he should have really popped for insulation, you know, for his house or something. And he says, how long will it take for that to come? Well, now, that's a pretty loaded question, Fred. His name was Fred. I could see it on his card in front, you know, with a big number. I said, that's a pretty loaded question, Fred. Actually, they figure maybe like, 40,000 years, maybe. I could see the relief. I could just see the relief coming over him, you know, just like a great wave. You could see his... And then immediately, because the relief was so great, he rolled down his window and started to holler. Come, knock it off. He was feeling great again, you know. The end of the world was coming. Then he went on, see, we go a little bit further on. He says, well, none of us will be here to see it. I said, well, that's true. We were now about roughly on Broadway, and we're turning down. You see, we're going downtown now. We get in front of one of those big Times Square movie houses, and he comes up with this one. He says, you know, it would be kind of interesting to see, though. There it was, by George. There isn't one of us around this crowd here who hasn't a secret desire, in spite of the fact we're all scared of the earth coming to the end. We'd like to be on hand to see how the rotten or the great or the fantastic short story ends. You want to see, is it going to go like a lightning bolt? Or is it going to melt? Or what, you know? And would you believe it if it did start to happen? What would you do? Would you believe it? I don't know. I'm curious whether the most profound churchgoer, what would he do if he walks out of his house at, say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, and all of a sudden, as far as you could see here and everything else, the air is filled with a fantastic conglomeration of enormous trumpets blowing. What would he do? I mean, what would you do? I mean, of course, I'm sure that a lot of well-meaning people are immediately now getting ready to mail me tracts. They know what they do. Well, I don't know whether they do know what they do. You know, everybody assumes he knows what he's going to do. But I'll tell you, what you do. You know? Oh, boy, would there be a lot of guys in the village teed off. I don't know how they handle that one, you know. Oh, boy, a lot of guys on the expense accounts, there'd be a lot of sudden fantastic decisions made. That's all I can say. But then on the other hand, you know, the feeling that the earth is coming to an end. Are you seriously speaking, though, friends, the way Burt Parks would do it so toothily, that there is not a single culture anywhere that they can find that does not have somewhere in its folk myths or its culture somewhere the story or the idea or the suspicion of the end of the world. Really, you know that? Every place they know about this, and everyone's now that's an interesting proposition, especially since the average man only lives 70 years, about, roughly, if he's lucky. Whereas in most parts of the world, a guy is pushing it if he lives fit to be 50. Many places, he's lucky if he makes 30. That's true. And yet, everyone has a vague fear of the end of the world. Well, now, the world is probably 2.5 billion years old, all the way back, and we don't know how many billion years it's going to continue, in spite of atom bombs, believe me. We consistently like to think somehow that our lousy little 70 years is the one where it's going to happen. Really, that's the one where it's going to happen, and it's been going on for generation after generation after generation. You know, shall I tell you about the time? I don't know whether to tell you about the time that the sudden fear went around the neighborhood that it had happened, that it actually happened in our neighborhood. True. Now, I'll tell you, when you're living in a highly automated urban area, really an automated urban thing like this, you are rarely aware of the things that make people suspect that the end of the world is coming. Because generally, the end of the world, we believe, is coming from natural sources, like the ocean is going to flip over. Yeah, that's true. Or the world's going to burn up. But when you're living in the city, you're not conscious of the world as such. You're conscious of the concrete and the buildings. That's why this guy thought he could beat the Ice Age by hiding in the basement of the Seagram building. Because his world is composed of air conditioners and, you know, sealed windows and all. He can't conceive of the whole prairie burning up. Because it just doesn't do that here in Manhattan. It doesn't. Whereas any farmer is always aware that any minute now, something is liable to come right out. Pow! Gone. Everything. He really is, because he saw it happen to old Ed Wilkins' place one day. And he remembers, you know. And that's the end of it, you know. And he's always walking around with a vague eye creeping over his shoulder all the time. That's why farmers are what they call fundamentalists. Oh, yeah. Oh, let me tell you, when that tornado jumps out of the bush and grabs you, throws you 14 miles into the next county, right past the county seat, at an altitude of 4,000 feet, you begin to have a vague feeling that all is not easily controlled by air conditioning. Believe me, you do. You just do, you know. It's just a fact. Well, one day in our neighborhood, I'm sitting there, you know, and it's it always happens in the summertime. The thing about the winter is it is a time when even nature itself is not doing much. Even snow is dead. It's dead. That reminds me. This is WOR AM and FM New York. Even snow itself, you see, is dead because it just, you know, it hangs there. It just comes down. But there is nothing dead about a tornado. You know, there is nothing dead. You know, a winter rainstorm is dead. A summer rainstorm is alive. You know the difference? It's a very peculiar thing. So it is always during summer we suspect the earth is going to come to an end. It really is this way. Nobody thinks about it in the dead of winter. But in the summertime, oh boy, it starts to sneak up on you. Well, one time, there was this big summer, a wild summer rainstorm, the kind that rolls. It rolled right over. And we get these, you see, out in the Middle West. You get them far more than you do here. Once in a while you get them here, but very rarely. Because you can see them coming, you know. The Seagram building and the Pan Am building isn't in the way of it, you know. And you can just see way over there it's dark. And everybody sort of huddles around. The snowball bushes suddenly get very white. They stand out like they're lit up from inside. They really do. It's everything gets very white and luminous. It's a peculiar luminescent quality. And a guy walking down the street with a white hat on, it looks like you see it for 4 miles. Why? I don't know. It's a quality in the air. And so you see way down at the end of the street, way out past the swamp, it's getting black. And you see a little sheet light. And you know it's raining cats and dogs in Gary. You know, it really is. They're really getting it there. Well, everybody knows it's coming. He says, shh, it's coming towards you. You just see it moving. And then you see it, and you can look, and you can see it at the other end of town. And you can hear guys hollering, you know, yelling and hollering out there, and you hear them. Yeah, you really do. And then, it just comes down, cats and dogs, and it's hot. Oh, boy, the raindrops are hot, and it roars and booms, and it runs down the street, and kids are yelling and hollering. And then about 20 minutes later, it gradually lifts. It's moved on, you see. It lifts. The sky is black on one side of you. Now it's on the left side of you. And on the right side of you, it's getting kind of light, you see. But there's a very funny thing then happens after that. There is a vague, whew, little breath of coolness hits. And the ground is one temperature, the air is another temperature, and the water is another temperature. And that's when the thing is about to happen. And so people start flubbing around. You know, you see them on the porches, and they're sweeping the water off and stuff. Well, one day, exactly like that, total peace reigned in the neighborhood. It was in the middle of the afternoon, like on a Saturday. Some street guys are sweeping the water, and ladies are out. You should have heard. I'll never forget. The first time that I knew a total scream, if you think Allen Ginsberg howls, I'll never forget the time Mrs. Bruner's wash was caught in one of these gigantic summer rains, because when they come, you know, this is a mill town. When that rain comes down, Daddy, it brings down like 4,000 pounds of coke furnace dust per square foot. And she has these white sheets. All of a sudden, she's got, you know, a lot of black rags hanging out there. You'd hear her screaming and hollering. Down goes the clothes poles, and Mrs. Bruner's out fighting, yelling and screaming. Banshee, let me tell you, she makes Ginsburg sound like a baby whimpering in the dark, which isn't a bad simile. But nevertheless, the problem, you see, is multiplied by the fact that you're always caught unawares. You really are. You never suspect it. The end of the world will never be heralded, I'm sure. That when it comes, it'll just split in half like an old used yo-yo. Ka-chunk! Two pieces. One sails off towards Ursinus Major, and the other one goes off towards the sun. That's all. And all the poor little... The only thing that's going to be left is a whole bunch of satellites swinging around without a home. No Earth. Nothing is sadder than a satellite without a thing to saddle around. But nevertheless, we're sitting around here, and you know, everybody's... And I'm out on the porch hollering, and Bruner's next door, and we're yelling and hollering in the back, and guys are throwing rubber balls from one porch. You know, it's typical, you know... Teaneck, New Jerseysville in the afternoon, that kind of thing. And it's sort of gray and nice and warm. There's a feeling of, a peculiar kind of feeling of togetherness that develops when there's a storm. It really does. You know, everybody starts hollering, yelling, because there's suddenly a common enemy. Everybody starts fighting, you know, stops fighting everybody else, and the only thing they're fighting is the curtains are getting blown down, that kind of stuff. Well, there's a quiet calm that sort of hangs there. Well, this afternoon, I never saw anything in my whole born days like it. This afternoon, everybody's out there fooling around. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And from the direction from where the storm came, right down the street, there was a strange glow, a peculiar kind of glow. Well, the first thing that everybody thought was old man Bruner was coming home. Well, you know, it was Saturday. Bruner had worked the day before, and he hadn't been home yet. So they figured that Bruner had been hanging around Flick's Tavern and lapping it up, you know? And he was his natural glow. And you could see it coming from that direction. You see the glow. Well, it was all I can say, it was the wildest thing. I can't say that I've seen anything more peculiar. And I'm, well, maybe about 11, and this made an absolutely indelible impression on me. Here's this thing coming down the street, right down the middle of the street. And it's still a kind of twilight, so you can't see anything clearly. Because of the storms, very kind of twilight, and there's a glow coming down the street. Well, at first, it was like a peculiar headlight or something, a strange-looking thing, and it's coming very slowly. That's what made it so weird, slowly coming down the street. Well, it comes down, it's moving now, it's about a half a block away, and suddenly you could hear the crowd, the people, down the street in the next block, you could hear yelling and hollering. You know, you hear, you know, in the summertime, you hear voices, and it's coming closer, and now it is about 4 doors down, and you should have heard the people hollering. There is a ball hanging in the middle of the air, about the size of a basketball, Ed. I'm telling you the truth, about the size of a basketball, and it is glowing like nothing you ever saw in your life. It is glowing a peculiar green, purple, blue glow. It's like you took 1,000 miles of neon tube and just squished it together, and it's glowing right there, hanging in the air, glowing, and slowly moving down the street. It's about 4 feet off the ground. It's glowing. Everybody's looking, oh, what? You know, they don't know whether to go out and grab it or what, you know? It just goes, well, all you know, you have the man has an instinctive knowledge of things aren't right, you know? You never heard more people diving under more porches, more guys taking the oaths. I could hear Bibles being uncorked. It was wild. You could hear guys whooping and hollering for blocks. You know, they saw this thing coming along. Well, it turned left. It literally turned left, and across the street was this house where a friend of mine lived, Stryker, and his mother and his father. Mrs. Stryker was a stringy, angry-looking lady, who everybody in the neighborhood hated because she was stringy and angry-looking and was really angry. They had a dog named Prince. Prince was the kind of dog that bit himself regularly, just out of keeping practice, that kind of a dog, you know? It was that kind of a family. And Stryker was one of these kids that kind of, you know, melted. He was like wax, a rotten kid, and he had a chromium bike. Well, there it was. All of a sudden, this thing turned left and went directly across the lawn. It was floating. It literally floated like... Have you ever seen a Japanese lantern? Well, it floated like that. It was a peculiar thing. It was about the size of a basketball. Well, it floated and floated right up the porch And I'm watching, Bruner's watching, all the kids are watching, floated right up the porch. Pow, this thing goes right through the front door. And it seemed like about 8 seconds later you heard more screaming and hollering out of the Stryker household. And then there was a dull in the house. It just went. Well, my old lady, of course, figured they'd finally got it for the way they were. Well, it just went. Well, then this thing floated out of a window that was high up in the living room. They had one of these high windows, you know, the kind they used to have over pianos. And you could hear a crash when it went through, and a crash, and a plow. It blew up right in the air. It just went boom. And everybody was sort of standing around. And you could hear Mrs. Stryker screaming and hollering. You could hear Lawrence yelling and hollering in the house. And you could hear the old man belting them because he figured he'd done it. And yeah, I mean, it's just the kind of thing like somebody threw something in through the window. Well, everybody's pouring out of the house. Everybody's and Mrs. Stryker's brought it. They're screaming. And here's their story. Their story was that they're in the kitchen having their usual argument. The kid is in the living room when all of a sudden this thing comes in through the living room door. He lets out a scream. The old lady and Mr. Stryker come tearing in, and they see this thing floating around in the living room. It makes a beeline for their Atwater Kent. It goes right for their Atwater Kent, blows the loudspeaker and the final amplifier right off the back end of it, burns up all the RF coils with one fell swipe of its claw, then rises slowly off of the antenna coupler and out the piano window, busting the frame as it goes. That's right. This is a phenomenon known as ball lightning. Have any of you ever seen ball lightning? It is extremely rare, very rare, and science knows very little about it. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a logical explanation. They just haven't found it. But everybody in the neighborhood, you should have seen. I'll tell you, it was wild. Elmer Wheeler, that night, at his revivalist tabernacle, had the first overflow crowd he had had since the big flood. It was incredible. You could hear the whooping and the hollering. You could hear the hymn singing. You could hear the tambourine banging. You could hear shrieking and yelling. And little kids were sitting there as quiet, soaking it in, their eyes puddling up. It was the day of the big revival. They're still talking about it out there. It's the time that everybody took the pledge. Bruner got home at 3 o'clock that afternoon and for over 4 hours didn't touch a drop. Absolutely sat there stone cold sober while I told him about the ball that came down the street. Almost got Bruner's house. And he just figured that what had happened was that God had a bad sight on that. The windage wasn't right. That if Bruner had been home, he'd have nailed him. As it was, they only got the Atwater Kent, which was a sign in our neighborhood. That Atwater Kent was tuned to WLS. Nothing but hillbilly music all day and all night, which is another reason why they hated the Strikers. The Strikers did not listen to WLS for over 7 years after that. Another shot out of the dark. Well, things of this nature, do you know that even to this day, right now, right in this town, in every town in the United States, there is somebody somewhere predicting the end of the world. Literally. And it's going to come like next week. It's not predicting it before a million. Oh, speaking of the end of the world, we better get the commercials here before Ted throws a Ted fit. We have here, paperback gallery. Now, the reason that I was very, very much reminded of this, the end of the world thing, do you know that an organization has been formed, a very official organization called the World Millennium Association? These are guys who figure they're going to live to see the end of the world. Truly. And one of the more intriguing facets of the end of the world syndrome, and it's been with people for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, is that it always approaches a frenzy at any numerical position on the calendar. And do you know one of the greatest end of the world fanatical waves swept America the night we went from the 19th century into the 20th century? Everyone expected, when the year 1900 hit, a gigantic bolt of sheet lightning would destroy the entire world and trumpets would blow. Now, this is true. We are now getting closer, inching closer and closer to the year 2000. And you will find that as the year 2000 approaches, so will the clarion bellows. In fact, the Millennium Association, which I have a note, it's in London. This is a Dateline London, March 22nd. It says, we do not believe that we will reach the year 2000. See, they take the year 2000, very important year. It's just a purely numerical designation, but somehow it scares people. Well, one of the listener types sent me something which I am about to read. Do not think that I am being sacrilegious. I am reading to you an advertisement out of a newspaper in Corpus Christi. Now, Corpus Christi is a city, like many cities, that live very close to nature. They live close to the Gulf. They get hurricanes on the hour, every hour. Are you aware of that? This is a hurricane city. They have been the subject of numerous explosions in the last few years. You know this, Ed. The swamp is right outside the city limit in Corpus Christi, so everyone is aware of the sound of snakes. They can hear occasionally alligators bellowing, and they can hear the wind howling over the Gulf. So this is a normal place for them to feel that the end of the world is about to come about. It'll never come out of Chicago, or Chicago, or Los Angeles. But Circleville, Indiana? Oh, yes. Circleville, Ohio? Oh, yes. Circleville, Wisconsin? Oh, yes. There's always one guy who thinks he can hear the sound. Now, hold it there, Eddie. Get ready now. We are about to have significant prognostication. The end of the world is nigh music. No, Ed, I gave you a cue. Give me it now. Hold on there. Now, hold it. Now. Hold it now. I got to build it up again. For crying out, the end of the world's going to come. It's got to come right. Now, already in there, we need significant end of the world prognostication, dire predictions. Oh, there we go. From Corpus Christi, taken out of a newspaper which was published last week and sent to me by a listener who says, Shepherd, get your tin hat. Miracle of miracles. Easter, April 14th, 1963. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished. Remember, October 7th, 1961. Vision of the New World Christian depicting good from evil. I saw three men seated on gold thrones on top of a small hill. One was dressed in long gray clothes with the emblem of the star and seven small candles on a candlestick. One was dressed in black skirt with a small white band across his neck and a string of beads which were holding a gold cross. The other was dressed in expensive business clothes. Each one muttered doctrine from time to time. Each one had a library of books behind him. In front of each one was a table filled with rich foods from which he minced. In front of each table was a chest overflowing with gold, in which poor people, raggedly dressed and starved, were bringing more gold coins and throwing them on the pile. Then I saw another man appear. He was riding a burro and was dressed in pure white and a mantle of pure red from his left shoulder to his right thigh and wrapped around his waist with long ends hanging down his side. He was holding one book, the Holy Bible. He shouted with a loud voice, October 7th, 1961, and turned to ascend a high hill in the other direction. Looking toward the top of this hill, I saw a number of mirrors which I was unable to count, but each one reflected the image of the Great One seated on a snow-white horse at the summit. He wore a gold crown on his head. I looked back at the small hill and saw three stacks of bones. The books decayed, and the gold had turned green, covered with dust and cobwebs. The people were following the man on his burro toward the Great One, and everyone was singing joyfully. Parable, an explanation. The people of the city on October 7th, 1961, saw a burro carrying a cross on its back. The burro represented stubborn mankind. The man represented the spirit of truth, love, wisdom, power, justice. The boys represented historic and scientific truth. At last, more good news can now be released today. In a secret laboratory,
And I want you all to listen here. In a secret laboratory, the discovery was made of elements so powerful in combination that they will bring about the resurrection of the dead. A secret laboratory. This great explosion, which will bring about the resurrection of all the dead people who ever lived in the world, will take place Sunday, April 14th, 1963. Thousand years of love, cities without poverty, cities without slum districts, cities without crime, cities without delinquency, yes, and many, many other wonderful benefits. Rejoice, the big day is near. All who believe in this are invited to drop by the tent next Sunday and be with us to witness this wonderful explosion. See this powerful demonstration happen before your eyes as you hear our free lecture simultaneously. We repeat our invitation. Do not miss the resurrection of the dead. 2 p.m. Easter Sunday, April 14th, 1963, Memorial Coliseum. All signals are go. Time, 10 days and holden. Stand by for final countdown. Clip this advertisement and send to a friend. Send stamped envelope for reply and, of course, your free gift. Boy, are you ready for April 14th? It's going to be in... Now, of course, innumerable people will call me and say that I am being sacrilegious. I am merely reading from a wild, almost a half-page advertisement from a big Corpus Christi newspaper. Word for word, I did not change a word, by the way. I'm fascinated by this. The mixture, do you notice the mixture of atomic bombs, the strange mixture of everything that's around us? One of the most intriguing aspects of the great fanatical things that have swept the world relating to the end of the world is almost invariably their practically total incoherence. Their total incoherence, but their wildly almost incendiary messianic quality, but totally incoherent. People riding up and down on hills and holding things and great flashes of thunder and lightning. And somehow you're to send, somehow way down at the bottom, you're to send the advertisement to a friend, apparently so that he doesn't miss the big day. I don't know, but nevertheless, there it is. Did I ever tell you about the time the city of Philadelphia was swept with one of the wildest, one of the greatest end-of-the-world fanaticisms that ever swept the Western Hemisphere, when thousands of people gathered on a great hillside outside of Wayne, wearing long gray sheets, waiting for the end to come, and all that happened is it started to rain. They stood there, and every one of them had put all of his money and all of his gotten gains into a great big pile and had given it to the leader. And they stood up there while it rained and rained. And then they finally came down two by two into the ark. They came down and found that the leader had decamped with his sheet and all, including all that boodle. And the end of the world really had come to them.